it was my job to go and tell the weavers when the cutlookers wanted to bring them up for mistakes that occurred. And also to take the, what they call the telecards around every day, which the weaver used to book up what they've woven for the pay at the weekend, sort of thing, you know. So, like, I used to get all over the factory through that way, you know. And down here there was five weaving sheds. There was the old shed, the new shed, the Jubilee, the new shed, and the Epa shed.
What was the sound like, first of all?
When you opened the door to go into the shed, it just hit you like a blast, you know. You might have anything up to, say, 500 looms in one shed, you know. Down here there was 1,040 looms altogether, I'd been. But of course when I was working there, things weren't all that brilliant. There, quite a lot of them were stopped, of course, you see. I would imagine that if a weaver was getting £2.5 a week, it was on a good thing, you know, £2.5 on it.
So there was just a great hive of industry, there was lots of noise, there wouldn't be a lot of communication, people were just putting their heads down and getting on with it, were they?
They used to lip read, you know, the weavers between themselves, they could tell, it's surprising how far they could tell and all, you know.
Was this the old sort of me-mowing that you hear about, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, there was a lot of that went on, you know. But to be very careful when you went in, walking about in the shed, you know, because the picking pegs, that's the thing that knocks the shuckle backwards and forwards, they were waving about like this, you know, and the aisles down between the looms weren't all that wide, because they used to crowd as many looms in a shed as they possibly could, you know.
And you had an encounter with a shuttle, is that right?
Oh, yes, yeah. A shuckle flew out of a loom one day, and it dug into the heel of my clog, and it went right along the edge of the sole. I wasn't very lucky, really. It didn't burn a bit higher, like, and it mantled, you know.
Later on, you then went on to the Victoria.
Victoria Mill at Chorley, where Morrison's is. There.
What were you doing there?
Well, actually, I went doing maintenance work at the beginning, and one of our joiners had gone away to learn slay making, which the mill had paid for, like, you know. And then when he came back, he didn't want to do it. And the mill manager asked me if I would take the job on, you see, and he would show me how to do this.
So what was the job? Tell us how it worked.
Well, the job was fitting what they call the race board onto the sleigh and lining it up so that there was no obstruction for the shuttles going across.
So the race boards and the sleigh were going one direction, the shuttles were whizzing across on
the other direction.
Your job was to sort of make sure the two of them were together.
Yeah. It was a job I did for quite a long, long while. They used to call on me as required, you say, you know. Usually when a beam had woven out and loom hadn't been performing properly, they'd get me down to do the race board up, you know, and sort of supposedly make it work back in working order. This, of course, was on the old Lancashire looms.
What were the looms like? I mean, from what you see of them, what you hear of them, they were a brilliant piece of machinery. They were a work of art in themselves almost, weren't they?
Well, I suppose they were at the time. All the cog work was cast iron and the driving wheels. And, of course, there's a certain amount of noise from the knocking the shuckle backwards and forwards, you know, and this sort of thing. And a general, like I say, if you get a lot of looms in one room, a general home of machinery sort of thing, you know. And it was really a blast of sound when you open the door to go in.
Now, you've got a picture here, a drawing that you've asked somebody to do for you, a line pencil drawing of what the site used to look like at the time. Just describe it for us. It was quite a site, wasn't it? Quite a building.
Oh, yes, yes. It was five-storey, with the lower storey at the bottom here was guarding rooms. The other four floors above were spinning rooms, which were closed about 1930 or something like that, I think.
And a huge building, isn't it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, quite, this is only the front part. There was another part that went back that way, you know, like back towards Epe.
So it had a feel very much of what an industrial site, did it? It was very distinctive.
Yeah, well, nearly everybody in the village worked there, you see.
Because of that, then, did it have a family feel or a village feel? It was very much a focus of the community.
Right. Yes, I would say it did, yeah. Everybody knew everybody else, of course, you see, when being villagers. The night watchman used to blow the whistle at 7 o'clock. That was to warn you that to get up, sort of thing, you know. And he blew it again at 7:30, and you had to be going through the gates then, you know. Now, otherwise, you went through the watch house, and the night watchman was there, and he used to take your name down, and you were fine a shilling or whatever. And the shilling in them days, you know, it required a bit of money.
Did you ever get a fine?
No, I didn't, but I got my name took down a time or two.
What was it like hearing that whistle go off? It must have been like an alarm call for the whole village, must it?
Well, I could hear it quite a way around, you know, yeah. I remember it going off one Sunday night, about 7 o'clock. And what had happened, the night watchman, he'd fallen asleep. And he woke up, and he must have thought it was morning, and he blew the whistle. Everybody from all the village, the houses in the village, they all went out. They thought there was a fire, you see. And it was 8 o'clock Sunday night, it was.
What was the whistle like? Was it like a train whistle, that kind of thing, was it?
Just steam.
A steam whistle.
Yeah. Aye.